So, Philip, some of the things that this consensus group discussed in terms of management is the patient for first-line metastatic disease. And there's a lot of interesting language. There are actually two papers, the original one in 2016 and then the more recent one, this in 2018. But the issue of the patient who presents with good performance status and the issue of age. So we presented this patient being age 75, which I think is a little bit on the borderline in what your paper talks about. How do you think through choice of first-line therapy, Philip, based on age?
So, Neil, there is no science here. There is one thing, which is talking to the patient and the family and stating what the goals of the treatment are and understanding what they prefer. So this is how I would discuss and reply to a question. So in a patient who's 75 and my goal is to stabilize the disease and give her maybe a prolonged life a bit within what I can do with the chemotherapy, but with good quality of life, it's hard to not favor gemcitabine nab-paclitaxel in a patient like this. In my practice, this will be gemcitabine nab-paclitaxel preferred.
And of course, you know, no matter what cancer we're talking about, again, this always comes up of the elderly patient. People say age is just a number, and then you say, suppose they're 95, and you know, you start really getting into some numeracy here. But one of the things, Andrew, that we asked the audience is, in terms of FOLFIRINOX, what's their bar? We asked the audience, what was the age of the oldest patient that they gave FOLFIRINOX to?
It's a and brave audience.
Very few people here have given it to anybody over age 80. And actually, I can tell you the answers of the faculty, not in any particular order, were 77, 84, 79, and 88. And actually, Andrew, you were the person who said 88. So can you describe this 88-year-old man?
Age is person? Just a number. This particular gentleman had a very high muscle mass, very strong, and the regimen was quite modified. So I think, again, age is a good kind of general guide to a patient's status and muscle content and performance and ability to handle triplet chemotherapy. But of course, some patients break the mold.
So again, one of the things, Eileen, that you all got into in that paper is choice of therapy based on performance status. And both of these papers are great papers to read. I really recommend them because you get a lot of granularity in the paper itself. But one of the issues comes up with PS2. So we presented a situation of a younger patient, but who is ambulatory but unable to work. So, you know, some of the elements of PS2. Eileen, how do you approach a patient like this and there's a choice of therapy?
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes back to a discussion with the patient. As Philip was saying, in terms of the goals, I think their concerns as to whether they want an infusion pump or alopecia, those are important issues for a lot of patients that help decide. For, you know, a 65-year-old with a PS of 2, I mean, I think traditionally we would be thinking gemcitabine nab-paclitaxel, but I would also say very modified versions of FOLFIRINOX 2 with reduced dosing are an option. And I think the whole issue of FOLFIRINOX versus modified FOLFIRINOX, in my opinion, it's gone. We have the SWOG study in metastatic disease show the best survival that we've seen with this regimen with modified FOLFIRINOX, and the story in the adjuvant setting, I think, also supports that. So I always upfront preemptively reduce the components of these drugs.
What is the toxicity that you most commonly see that's problematic with FOLFIRINOX, Eileen?
I think the biggest one is fatigue, which can be particularly debilitating, and people are, you know, laid up for a week or 10 days, and that's very hard for people. I think that to me is, it's not so much the GI issues, although I don't mean to minimize those, or the myelosuppression. Those we can address and adjust, but the fatigue is a challenge.
I just want to pick up a little bit, because that was actually my favorite part of these papers, was the discussion you have, the preliminary discussion, goals of therapy. Margaret, I can recall a classic paper written by George Sledge and Kathy Miller about metastatic breast cancer, where they talked all about this issue of sitting down with the patient and talking about goals of therapy. Margaret, can you share your own clinical experience and how you approach these patients?
You know, until we have a biomarker to tell us which treatment a patient is likely to be resistant to, you've got to really base your discussion on patient preference and the toxicity profile. I mean, some patients, they don't want to be bald. They would rather take more toxicity rather than lose their hair. So it's really all about what the patient wants, and having a frank discussion about that is really, really important.
One other thing, Eileen, that I saw in the paper, the group talks about the idea of support for very aggressive therapy. So I guess the issue of a patient who's by themselves at home, et cetera. What were some of the discussions that went on about that?
I think we want to make sure there's a designated healthcare proxy for some of these patients, or if it's an older person or a single person living on their own, that they have a friend or a family member that's trusted, that's involved in their care and, you know, able to back up. I do think it is a concern giving these regimens for people who don't have good support systems. I think in general we worry in terms of risks of toxicities and those, of course, considerations. So in the setting of palliation, I think we have to acknowledge the finite limitations of our therapy and make the therapy as palatable as possible. And part of that is being able to deliver it. And you can only deliver it if the patient can tolerate it. So I think that's part of the thinking that we had as the group.